Hello, everyone. Welcome into Young Lads, episode 39. Peter Defeat Jr. here with you. Harris Eisenberg joining me in New York, rocking his New York Islanders jacket. The season's over. How did you feel about it?
I'm just so glad it's over. So glad it's done. I don't have to talk about it. This city is buzzing right now. We got the Rangers, obviously, sadly. The Rangers playing well. The Knicks are playing well. It looks like it's going to be New York-Boston in the conference final in both the NBA and the NHL. So, I mean, this city is really alive right now.
Now, I know you're a Knicks fan, but would you root for the Rangers, even though you're an Islanders fan?
No. No. Absolutely
not. Would you go to a game, though?
Oh, absolutely.
I think that's a different
question. I got offered. So, here's how much Knick tickets are going for, at least. I got offered two tickets for game one of Knicks Pacers on the Chase Bridge, the front row of the Chase Bridge for $950 for the pair. I said, no, absolutely not. 3 hours before the game, they lowered it to $600 for the pair. I was going to buy them. And then my buddy texted me that he needed an extra guy for his Topgolf league. So I said, I'll just go watch the game at Topgolf instead. Probably a good call.
Yeah, you spent what, like $600 less at Topgolf?
Yeah,
that's a good financial decision. Dave Ramsey would be very happy with you.
Good man.
Or whatever his name is that does all the financial stuff. I think it's Dave Ramsey. Anyways, all right, a lot to talk about. Should have done this perhaps as my cat is trying to get back on my table. I'm trying to keep her off so she's not in the picture. So should have probably did this in the first or second episode that we did in May, but here we are. Doing our biggest surprises so far. We're what, about six full weeks?
About 40 games
into the season. Yeah, because the Rays are 19-19 right now, so that's what, 38. Some teams that are, you know, played 40 games or so. So I told Harris last night, was it last night, the day before, whatever, come out with our biggest surprises and biggest disappointments so far. We're going to do 5 and 5. Hopefully we don't drag it out too long. But Harris, I will let you start. We're going to go surprises first, disappointments last. So give me your first surprise.
Listen, number one, and it's back-to-back episodes, we're talking about a team that we're never going to talk about, that we thought we weren't going to talk about. That's the Oakland A's, people. The Oakland A's. I mean, look, they're 18-21, whatever. But I will say, Mason Miller has become must-see TV. That TV is on every time he's on the mound. And it's not just Mason Miller. It's the whole back end of the bullpen. You know, they got Urcig back there. Obviously, Paul Blackburn starting. But if you compare the ERAs, Oakland's starter ERA is 21st in baseball. Their bullpen ERA is, I believe, 9th in all of baseball. And whatever statistic this is, late and close games. So I guess that's a game that's late after the 7th inning and within 3 runs. Team WHIP in those scenarios leads all of baseball 1.14. So, you know, look, we're not saying the A's are going to make the playoffs because they're not. They're probably going to finish 50 games under 500. Houston will somehow catch them. That's a spoiler alert for the segment. But Mason Miller's become must-see TV. I mean, he's consistently 102 to 103 on his fastball. And the A's are at least playing competitive ball. I mean, they took a game from the Rangers. Shea Longoliers had a massive day during that doubleheader. He hit a couple homers, became just the 5th Oakland A to hit a homer in both games of a doubleheader. So it's a scrappy little club. I'm going to go with the Oakland A's as my biggest surprise here thus far.
Yeah, spoiler alert, they were on my list. They're not number one, though, for me. Number one is the Washington Nationals. Just because first time since 2019 that they were above 500. They're at 500 now, as of yesterday. 18-18, 2 games back of the 3rd wild card spot. They're a lot more further back in the East. I think they're 7 games back. But CJ Abrams looks like a franchise guy. They got him in that trade with Juan Soto, which at the time, people didn't really know who was going to win that trade. It turns out that the Nationals probably won that trade because Soto was there for what, a year and a half. They made the postseason once, went to the NLCS in 2022, but then didn't, or no, 2022, but lost to the Phillies in 5 games. didn't go back to the playoffs last year, and now this year he's got traded again to the Yankees. But C.J. Abrams on the year, 272, 7 home runs, 20 RBIs. And then also another guy that needs to get highlighted because of how well his season is starting is Trevor Williams. 4-0, a 1.96 ERA. This is a guy that led all pitchers last year in home runs given up with 34. He's the only starting pitcher not to have allowed a home run this year so far. Now, I know I just jinxed it, but he had a really good outing against the Baltimore Orioles in game one of that two-game series. Athletics. Nationals are playing really good baseball. Mackenzie Gore's kind of turning around. Josiah Gray's been injured, but I think once he comes back, he's going to add some depth to that rotation because I really like him. I don't know about a whole lot of other guys, but I really liked watching how he pitched and how he matured last year when he made the All-Star team for the Nationals. So I think him and Trevor Williams are going to help this Nationals team either stay around 500 or be above 500. Like you, I don't think they're going to make the playoffs just because the AL East is not only so competitive, but there's a lot of teams underperforming right now, like the Diamondbacks, like the Giants, the Cardinals, that I think are going to come back and step it up. But I love how the Nationals are playing right now. And like I said, only two games back of the third wild card spot.
Yeah, the Nats are a very entertaining club. I am right with you on Washington. I'm going to go to the NL Central here for my second surprise. And I guess to some, it's not a huge surprise, but based off the contract that he signed, I guess it is a big surprise. I'm going to go with Shota Imanaga, who signs this really cheap deal in Chicago. And everyone's like, okay, yeah, like, you know, that's the Cubs' fallback on Yamamoto, who just got 325 and 12 from the Dodgers, signing the guy to a four-year, $53 million contract. Everyone's thinking he's going to be one of those Japanese guys. You know, he doesn't really throw very hard. You know, stuff's all right, but he's probably going to get shelled. No, he leads all of baseball in ERA. 1.08 ERA for Imanaga. He's 5-0. 43 strikeouts and 41 and two-thirds innings. He doesn't walk anybody. He's only walked five batters this year. And he's a guy who just brings this energy and brings this life to the Cubs who, you know, we don't know what the Cubs are going to be this year. Cody Bellinger obviously was hurt for a little bit, but he's back. They lost Marcus Stroman in the offseason, so the pitching was a question mark. Justin Steele's been out. So they needed some guy to kind of step in there and at least try to give the Cubs a replication of what last season was up until the last 3 weeks of the year. And Imanaga, I think, has really surpassed expectations here. So I'm going Shota as my next big surprise.
Yeah, the two big guys coming out of Japan were Imanaga and Yamamoto. And I'm sure if you asked a couple of guys, they would have said that Yamamoto would have had this stat line. Now, granted, Yamamoto's been better in his first six starts, but you know, he hasn't been that dominant force that we thought he was going to be, and Shoto has. I'm going to preface this by saying I don't think this is much of a surprise that he's this good this year, but that it's a surprise that he's this dominant. And for me, it's Tyreek Skubal. 4-0, 1.90 ERA, 53 strikeouts, which leads Major League Baseball, again, as of yesterday when I was writing these notes, but only six walks, and opponents are hitting 175 off him. He's been so good. Now, I don't think he's going to win the Cy Young just because he can't. He's not going to have the innings under him. He'll probably throw 120 to 150, and that would be even less than what Blake Snell threw both times that he won the Cy Young. He threw 180 in 2018, and I believe he threw 185-ish last year when he won it with San Diego. But, I mean, this was a guy, he threw in 15 games in 2023 after he came back from that flexor tendon surgery, went 7-3 with a 2.80 ERA, 102 Ks in 80 innings. Now, if you would have given me that stat line again this year, then I would be like, yeah, that's a really good season. But he is far and exceeding expectations right now. And if he didn't have that innings limit restriction that I believe AJ Hinch is going to put on him, I think he'd be the front runner for Cy Young right now. And the Tigers are also 19-18. So that can be a kind of like a backwards surprise 2-point, you know, 2B, that the Tigers are as good as they are, because we didn't think the Tigers were going to be what they are. And we were kind of scoffing at the fact that AJ Hinch was up for, you know, manager of the year votes. And we're like, they're not going to be that good. And here we are, you know, with the Tigers at 19-18 in the middle of that AL Central. And at a time they were leading the Central. So we'll see if they keep it up, you know, second half of the season.
I'm going to stay in the same division here, Peter. This team is 23-16 and has really surprised me with their pitching specifically. I'm going to go with the Kansas City Royals. And this is all credit to the front office here. I mean, you go out, you sign Seth Lugo, you sign Michael Wacha, you stick with all these young guys, right? Bobby Witt Jr., Vinny Pasquantino's back with a bang. I mean, he homered last night, had three RBIs. Brady Singer, you look at Lugo and Singer, both those guys are top 15 among starters in all of baseball in ERA. And this Royals team, like they can hit. Salvador Perez is having another excellent year. Who knew Salvador Perez could be in the conversation for being an MVP right now? I'm not saying he's winning the MVP, but he's in the conversation for having, once again, a heck of a year after he really revitalized his game last year. So, you know, they got a nice young core. They got Furman, who's playing really well, MJ Melendez, Kyle Isbell. They got Garcia, Michael Garcia at the top of the lineup. He's produced really well for Kansas City. So overall, I think, you know, a lot of people question the pitching. They question both sides, really. And I think the offense has really come out to play. They thumped the Angels last night, which, again, isn't surprising. So, yeah, 23-16 for the Kansas City Royals. And they're sitting in a pretty prime spot right now. I'm going KC as my big surprise because they've just sucked since 2015. They've just been so bad. And it seems like I won't say they've got it right, but at least to start, they are doing things very well this season to start.
Yeah, I mean, I have the same number three, actually. Kansas City Royals. I showcased Salvador Perez, Seth Lugo, and then I'm going to tell you a little bit about Singer and Reagans. But this would be the highest full season, both average and OPS for Salvador Perez right now. He's hitting 326, and he's got an OPS of 945. He hasn't had this high of an average or OPS since 2020. So that's 5 years ago. And that was a shortened 60-game season. So if he plays the full season and stays healthy, which, knock on wood, hopefully he will, this would be a career best year. And then, bless you. As you know, you mentioned Seth Lugo. He's given up two runs or fewer in six of his eight games. He's got a 1.92 ERA. But Brady Singer is the one guy that I thought in this rotation could make or break it because he was so good in 2022 and then just regressed so badly for some reason in 2023, but him and Reagans are actually really good in 16 games between them. 5-3, 2.87 ERA, 100 strikeouts in 88 in a third innings, only 30 walks. So both of those guys, and Reagans came over from the Rangers in that Aroldis Chapman deal, and a lot of people had him as a dark horse Cy Young Award winner, and both of those guys behind Lugo and behind Wacha, you know, are making for a really good punch. And we didn't even really talk about Bobby Witt Jr. as well too, but he's having another career year, and he looks like he's going to stay at shortstop and be one of those franchise guys for a bunch of years to come. So, yeah, Royals 2.5 games back in the AL Central. They're 2 games up on Seattle for the third wild card spot. You said they were 23-16, so they won yesterday, right? Yep. When they played the Angels. When I wrote this, they were 22-16. So those numbers are going to move as far as games back in the Central and games up on Seattle. But yeah, I think the Royals in that Central have a really good shot of competing with the Guardians just because of how dominant their pitching's been. And if you get Bobby Witt, Pasquantino, Isbell, and Salvador Perez to keep doing what they're doing right now, that can make for a really fun, you know, last couple of weeks in the Central.
It really can, and you know, the Central is a lot more competitive than it has been in the past. We'll go to another competitive division. We'll go to the NL East here. Marcell Ozuna. Who saw this coming? Right? I mean, the guy's been in and out of jail. He can't stay healthy. He's on a lineup. He's in a lineup that's just absolutely just star-loaded. I mean,
you're talking about Marcell Ozuna from the Braves, right?
Yes. Yeah, so did you hear Bob Costas last night say during the broadcast that Ozuna from the Braves is one of the best hitters in baseball? I thought it was hilarious. You got Olson in that lineup, Acuna in that lineup, Albies, Austin Riley. Marcell Ozuna isn't even hitting the top four in that lineup, yet he leads all of baseball in home runs and RBIs. And, oh, yeah, he's batting 315 too. I mean, he has been incredible. And I know last season he went for 40 and 100. You know, say whatever you want. This guy has been revitalized. I think he's just literally just focusing on playing ball. And I think that's what the Braves need. That's what baseball needs. I mean, if you remember the days in Miami, it was right after Ozuna got recalled after getting sent down to the minors because he had a little bad stretch. I believe that was in 2016. I mean, Miami is a place where you just go focus on baseball because everything in Miami sucks, you know? Braves, I mean, Atlanta's a great city. But, I mean, guy, just focus on your baseball, get paid. And Marcell Ozuna is doing just that, 12 homers, 38 RBIs. I know he went from 40 and 100 last year, but I did not see this coming. I did not see him repeating himself and leading all of baseball in those two categories.
Yeah, and right now when Matt Olson doesn't have his home run stroke yet and Austin Riley's kind of struggling with the bat, it's a good bottom of the order type of guy to have, especially when the middle of the order is getting on base so much, you know, guys to drive him in with Marcell Ozuna. And like you said, he's not even batting in the top four of the lineup. So when you have a guy leading all of baseball with home runs and RBIs in the bottom of your lineup, that's a really stacked lineup. My number four is the Athletics, and you touched on them a little bit. Somebody that we really haven't touched on a whole lot, Austin Adams, another guy in that bullpen, 17 games, a 1.42 ERA, 17 strikeouts, 5 walks. Mason Miller, just to give you guys some numbers too, 8-for-8 in saves with a 1.10 ERA, 33 strikeouts, excuse me, 4 walks. So 4 games behind Texas in the AL West, 4.5 back of the third wild card spot. They're 18-21. Or did they lose? Do you know if they lost last night?
Yeah, they're 18-21. They lost. Yeah.
So 18-22 actually, because this was before they played. So they're 18-22 now. But yeah, for all the same reasons that I like the Nationals, they're just playing competitive baseball. And I know you sent me a meme on Twitter the other day that they're kind of like Major League Baseball, where the owner wants them to tank and move, and they're just kind of like revitalizing themselves with a lot of young talent and guys that, you know, shouldn't be playing baseball but are. So it's just a fun story. And if the Athletics can somehow stay around 500 for the entire season, I think maybe towards the end of the year you might get some life back in that Coliseum, especially in September, just cheering on these guys. But who knows? Mason Miller, I mean, is already getting trade talks surrounding him, and they're, you know, the GM for the Athletics is saying that it's steep. But I mean, if they can stay competitive and not get more than 15 games under, I think it'll be a fun atmosphere in Oakland, especially because this could be the last year in Oakland. So who knows? Yep. Maybe the fans will come out and kind of say their goodbyes to a team that, in all encompasses, were supposed to go 0-162, and right now they're showing that, you know, they're playing some competitive baseball.
Now, I want to stick with Oakland for a second because I got a question to ask it. You mentioned the GM. Who has the harder job in the Oakland Athletics organization, the GM or Mark Kotze, the A's manager? Because you got to remember, the mindset that's coming down from ownership is, okay, cool, we're okay this year, but we're just going to trade everybody.
So then I think it would be the GM, because Mark Kotze is just filling out the lineup. I get what you're trying to say, but the GM is still trying to trade all these pieces and get talent back for these pieces. So he's trying to find guys that don't have a lot of trade value. How much trade value does Brent Rooker really have? He's not getting you back a CJ Abrams, Mackenzie Gore type of deal. So you're going to have to find somebody that you really like in like rookie ball for one of these clubs. You know, say he goes to the Red Sox for you know, all intents and purposes. You have to find somebody in the Red Sox rookie ball organization that is like 18, 19 years old. He's not going to be up for another 3 years, that you really like, that you think is going to develop into, you know, what, you know, Mason Miller type of pitcher. So I think they would have the harder shot because they just have no trade value. It's not like they're trading Juan Soto, you know, like the Padres did, and they were able to get back some big pieces, or like the Nationals did, and they were able to get back CJ Abrams and Mackenzie Gore and all those guys. So I think the GM has the harder shot because Mark Kotze is kind of just, you know, if they get traded, they're like, oh, well, I just have to write somebody else's name in that spot. And I have to utilize what I'm being given. I mean, so that's my thought process. I think it's harder for the GM just because A, no trade value, and B, they have to try to find guys that aren't going to be up for the next 3 to 4 years, maybe even 5 years, and they have to hit on the draft, which all of a sudden now, not all of a sudden, it's been a couple of years, but you can't just tank and have the number one pick. Like the Cleveland Guardians last year were a pretty, you know, decent team, and they got the number one pick. I think they would have been the 12th pick had it been a regular draft. So now you can't just suck and get the number one through number five pick. You have to be lucky now in that sense too. So I think they got the number four pick this year because I was looking at the draft rankings. But, you know, they could very easily lose 110 games and then next year get like the 12th or 13th pick. So it's a lot harder now.
I think they both have very hard jobs but have very easy jobs at the same time because, if you remember, none of these guys are getting fired. Bob Melvin was the manager in Oakland for how long? About, what, 8, 9 years? Right.
I think that's different, though, because Oakland was actually good for those, eight years?
Yeah, but they were in some bad years at the end of that time, though. Billy Bean stepped down, you know. Like who's actually getting fired here? Like, to me, that's my mindset why I think Kotze's got the harder job, because it's like, oh, God, you know, we're actually okay. You know, we're playing good ball right now. If they trade all these guys, you got to think Kotze's thinking, oh, my God, like, my job's going to be on the line, because as a manager's job, you got to win ball games, you know? So
yeah, but I think if they trade away Mason Miller, it's very clear in the eyes of everybody that understands baseball that they're tanking and that they don't care about this season. So I think that makes Kotze's job even easier, because now he doesn't have to care about winning ball games either, because the front office doesn't care about winning ball games. It'd be different if, say, they were from some reason 50-50 at the trade deadline, right? And they bring in a couple of pieces to try to add wins and add some pieces and you know, add a starter or whatever, you know, a Seth Lugo, just for, you know, argument's sake, just because we've been talking about him. But they try to add a piece like that, then it becomes, okay, now I have to win second half of the season. But if you're going to trade away Mason Miller and Brent Rooker and Shea Langeliers and, you know, Estuary Ruiz and all these other guys, you're going to send them down because they wore a bracelet that was promoting an anti-ownership bar, then it makes it very easy in my mind for Mark Kotze to be like, okay, they don't care about winning, so let me just write a lineup that I think could potentially be competitive, but if we lose this game, I don't care because they don't care. Which, I mean, I'm sure he does care because he doesn't want to be one of those managers that loses 110 games. But I'm saying that in the sense of, okay, I'm secure with my job because they're not focused on winning yet. So let me just put out the most competitive lineup I can based on the players that they're giving.
Yeah, I can get behind that. And I see that too. All right, let's go to number five. And it's kind of a tie for me, but I'm trying to lean one way. It was between two teams that actually played last night, the Astros and the Yankees. This guy did hit a homer, so I'm going to single him out because I think it's just a really nice story. I'm going to go with John Singleton here.
I like to single him out.
John Singleton. I didn't think of that. Okay. he's gotten a really good opportunity to be back in baseball. If you remember, this is a guy who was a young prospect for the Astros, 22, 23 years old. And then from 2016 to 2022, was out of baseball, had a bunch of problems. If you remember back in the day, the Astros signed him to that 10-year, you know, $20 million contract, but he soon came up and it just, you know, was unable to play for, what, 7, 8 years? But now he's back. Jose Abreu stinks. So they sent him down to, like, the complex league to go get his swing right. So all hail John Singleton here. 25 games for him on the year, 239. 4 homers, 10 ribbies, hit a bomb off the facade of the upper deck of the big ballpark in the Bronx last night, which was impressive, and then made a game-saving pick at first base on a check swing bunt by John Birdie, which if he doesn't make that pick, the Yankees probably tie the game in that situation, probably end up winning. So really good story, and you know, he came back to Houston last year after 11 games with Milwaukee, and in 50 total games since he's been back on the Astros, 6 homers, 20 RBIs in 50 games since rejoining Houston in 2023. A great story, and it looks like he's going to be the first baseman here for the next couple of months. So just a nice feel-good story for John Singleton.
Yeah, and real quick, just some more news. They're supposed to get Urquidy back. Looks like they're going to get McCormick back, and it looks like they're going to get Christian Javier back. at some point. So that Astros team is going to start getting healthier. And they need to get healthier. I mean, Lance McCullough Jr. looks like maybe mid-season. They already got Verlander back, and really Castro's been the only guy in that rotation that's given them any good sense of like, okay, maybe there's a way that we can turn it around once we start getting healthy. Because without that, they might be. I mean, right now they are worse than Oakland. They're in the fifth spot in the West, but they could be even looking even more worse. So just like you, I'm going back and forth between two. I'm actually just going to straight up cheat and call this my surprise number five, even though it's five and six. I couldn't choose between both, so I'm going to just say both. It's Red Sox and Cubs pitching. Both that we thought were going to be question marks this year. I want to showcase two guys from both. First of all, Cutter Crawford and Tanner Houck. Amazing start to the season. Crawford is first in the AL in ERA, sixth in MLB. Tanner Houck is fourth in the AL, 10th in MLB. Combined 5-4 with a 1.87 ERA, 92 strikeouts and 91 innings, 22 walks. 15 games started between both of them. They've looked amazing. Tanner Houck has looked incredible. They've kind of been bouncing him back and forth between bullpen and starting rotation. I think he's finally found his little niche spot in the rotation. He threw that complete game shutout a couple of weeks ago. Cutter Crawford, who was kind of the same way, you didn't know what you were going to get. You were hoping for hoping he would get to that fifth inning a couple of years ago, but both of those guys have been amazing. And then the trio of Imanaga, Assad, and now Jameson Taillon, since he's been back. He started the last four games. He was on the injured list earlier in the season, but since he's come back, those three guys combined, 11-0, 1.29 ERA, 103 innings between them, 90 strikeouts, 22 walks. They've started 18 games between the three of them. Tyone's been the one that's only started four just because he's come back from the IL. But Imanaga is first in the MLB in ERA, first in the NL, like you said. And then Assad is fourth in both MLB and NL and ERA. And just those are the two guys, plus Tyone when he comes back and he starts really getting those innings underneath him. He's only got 20-ish innings right now, I believe 23. But those are the guys that are kind of holding the team afloat, especially like you said, with Cody Bellinger coming back. He was on the injured list for a little bit. Dansby Swanson's been kind of up and down this year. Christopher Morel is starting to get hot just a little bit, but he's still been, you know, kind of on the cool side of things. Michael Bush had that hot week. He's kind of cooled off a little bit. So those three guys, especially Imanaga and Assad, really good. And then the pitching for the Red Sox is what was keeping them, you know, in the middle of the AL East for a little bit. Now they're down towards the bottom with the likes of the Blue Jays and the Rays. I believe the Rays just passed them this last week after going on that 6-game win streak. But offense not there for the Red Sox, so you gotta rely on pitching, and they've been really, really good for the last, like you said, what, 6 weeks? It's been about 6 weeks or so.
Yeah.
Because we're, what, second week of May? Yeah, we played all of April, so about 6 weeks. About almost six full weeks.
Yeah, about 40 games in for every team, so that's kind of a good benchmark to kind of see where you are. I guess we'll kick off disappointments, right?
Go ahead, kick us off.
You know, I have a really controversial one that's coming up, but we'll start with, I guess, a basic one that you probably have on your list. I mean, gotta be the Houston Astros. I mean, other than Rynel Blanco.
When I called him Castro.
Huh?
Blanco.
Yeah.
When I was talking about who was there, I said Castro, not Blanco. Sorry. So I apologize.
Oh, no worries. Other than Blanco, who, again, had a great outing last night against the Yankees, this team has failed to find a reliable start. I mean, again, Urquidy out, Javier out, but they're expecting to get him back. Verlander is just, you know, he started the season on the IL, hasn't been too good. This isn't the offense's fault here. I mean, Altuve's still Altuve. Alvarez is still Alvarez. Kyle Tucker's still Kyle Tucker. Obviously, you'd like to see Bregman producing a little bit more, especially going into his walk here. The Astros lineup's just not that deep, especially when you get to the bottom three. Bottom four, actually. I mean, Yainer Diaz is a guy who doesn't scare you. Jake Myers is a light hitting outfielder. Like I said, you know, they move Singleton up, and he's producing. But, you know, outside of the top four, nobody really scares you in that lineup. But I think it's the pitching. I mean, the pitching's been atrocious. Josh Hader has been historically bad. And again, when with Josh Hader being bad, you can't really use Ryan Pressly. And when you have used Ryan Pressly, he hasn't been good. So,
and now he's dealing with some back tightness too. So who knows? You could have Pressly on the IL with Hader not doing well.
Yeah, and which moves Hader into the closer's role, and Hader finally got a save last night. I mean, look at Presley's numbers this year. 0-1 with an ERA north of 5.5. Not very good. So, yeah, Houston's probably my biggest surprise, just how bad they've been. I mean, this is a team that's consistently at least going to the ALCS every year. This is shocking.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have the entire Astros team in my disappointments, but one of the disappointments is Alex Bregman. I'll talk a little bit more about that. But my first disappointment is the Cardinals. We talked about it last year about how bad they were and how we didn't know what direction Mozeliak was going to go with them. Right now they're 15-21, 6 games back of Milwaukee in the Central, 3 games back of San Diego for the third wild card spot. Their bright spot in that lineup was Contreras, and now he's out for about 2 months with a fractured arm after the J.D. Martinez swing, which it was a freak accident, but still a bad accident altogether. He was hitting 280 with 6 home runs and an OPS of 949. And then these three guys who you thought were going to be pillars in the lineup. First of all, Goldschmidt's batting 195 with a 550 OPS. He's only hit 2 home runs. Newt Barr's batting 183 and Nolan Gorman's batting 175. The only guys producing on that team are the pitchers again, with Lance Lynn, Sonny Gray, you know, being those pillars. They're having a pretty good season. Sonny Gray, since coming back from the IL, has been amazing. But again, it's if you can't score runs, you're not going to win games. And right now, Newt Barr OPS is 624. We thought he was going to be something special after we watched him in the WBC. Hasn't been anything. Jordan Walker hasn't really done anything since he came up for the first 2 weeks last year. Nolan Gorman, 573 OPS. I mean, they're not getting any production from the players that they need to. And Nolan Arenado's trying to carry this team, but he can't because nobody else is either getting on base, or when he gets on base, nobody else is moving him over or getting him in, because Goldschmidt's got 11 RBIs on the year.
You bring up Jordan Walker, and this is a really good point about the Cardinals that I really need to get off my chest here. The Cardinals' failures are not on its players. Cardinals' failures are on the organization not knowing how to develop players correctly. You bring up Jordan Walker at the beginning of the 2023 season. Has a great start. No, we need him to hit the ball in the air more. Go back to Memphis. This year. Yeah, he struggles. Back to Memphis. See his press conference the other day with the media out in Memphis? He's just sighing, saying, yeah, they want me to hit the ball in the air more. Yeah, they want me to hit the ball in the air more. It's just not working. You're ruining this kid's confidence. Victor Scott. Granted, he was atrocious in the big leagues to start the year. But the Cardinals stink. Why not just run him out in center field every single day in the big leagues, or at least 4 days a week? This team's not making the playoffs. Contreras is out. That's the biggest bat in the lineup, at least numbers-wise this year. Contreras is out. Just run these kids out in the big leagues. Get their reps in the big leagues. We're talking about Jackson Holliday, right? How, you know, the kid never hit ninth before. Kid never played second base before in pro ball. He was doing something completely new and different for the first time at the highest level. Let these kids, Walker, Victor Scott, let them figure it out in the big leagues if you're going to be this bad. Because ultimately, you're not bringing back Goldschmidt. You might as well just trade him at the deadline. You know, will they trade Arenado? I doubt it. But Contreras is going to be out longer than 8 weeks, they said. So let these kids figure it out in the big leagues. And stop sending them down for things that ultimately, like, you know, Peter, you played ball. It is not easy to control hitting the ball in the air, as all these analysts think it is. Like last night, I'll give you an example. Last night I was watching MLB Network. or should I say working. White Sox were playing Cleveland, and Gavin Sheets was up in the first inning with a runner on second, nobody out. And he hits a deep fly ball to left center field. Left fielder makes a nice play. Yonder Alonso gets on there. It's like, oh, you know, he's got to pull the ball there to waste it out. It's like, it's harder to control when you got guys throwing 100 miles an hour on the mound saying, hey, kid, you know, pull a ground ball to the right side. You know, it's hard to control. You know, I understand, like, these guys are big leaguers. And, you know, even at the college level, we work on situational hitting all the time. But that's not easy. So, you know, I think they just got to figure it out at the big league level, the Cardinals.
And let me put it in this perspective, too. If I, as a pitcher, have a guy on second base and I know you're trying to hit something to the right side to move him over, why would I throw you anything inside?
Right.
So that's the other thing. So now not only am I not throwing you something inside that you can pull, but I'm throwing you away, 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 and your instinct is not to pull something away, but it's to go the other way with it. So it's like it's a double-edged sword. It's a lose-lose situation in that instance for Gavin Sheets, because he's probably getting pitched outside because whoever's on the mound for the Guardians knows that he's trying to move the runner over or, if anything, just get a base hit somehow. So he's trying to get him to hit the ball in the air, which – to the left side, which is not going to do anything but just get an out for him.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's harder to control the baseball as a hitter than it is a pitcher. We all know that. Second biggest surprise, the Blue Jays. Or disappointment, the Blue Jays. This offense, which you think, like, Vlad Guerrero and Bo Bichette and even Dalton Varsho, like, you'd expect this team to be high up there in home runs. They're bottom five in baseball in homers this year. Bo Bichette's hitting under 200. It's a tumultuous year for the Blue Jays because you got Bichette and Guerrero coming up on their, you know, contracts here pretty soon. I think one of them is going to be a free agent. I believe Bichette's going to be a free agent. I think it's after this year or after next year. And the Blue Jays are in last place. They had a team-only meeting the other day in Philadelphia. I mean, it just feels like a boys' club over there in Toronto. I feel like John Schneider's not actually doing anything. I feel like he's just, you know, feel like he's just hanging on to a job that he doesn't deserve. I feel like he got thrown in that fire just because, you know, we know Charlie Montoyo got fired, you know, for the wrong reasons in 2022. I'm going with the Blue Jays. I mean, this offense is simply terrible.
Yeah, and you're also talking about a Blue Jays team that hasn't made it out of the first round
right
of the playoffs. They haven't even made it out of the wild card round, let alone the ALDS. They lose last year to a team that didn't win a postseason game in a while, didn't even win a postseason series in 18 years. You lose to the Rays in 2020, and then you have a 10-0 lead in Game 2 in 2022 against the Mariners, and you lose it, and you get swept on your home field. So this is just a team that I don't think is going to make the postseason this year. So you're looking at both big-time Toronto managers getting fired. They already fired Keefe, the Lightning head coach. Or not the Lightning head coach, the hockey head coach. And now you're probably looking at John Schneider getting fired this year, too. And you're probably not going to get Bichette back. You're probably not going to get Guerrero back. So who's going to be your only superstar? Springer?
Kevin Kiermaier,
you know, you're going to sign him for another, you know, one-year, $6 million deal to go play, you know, right field for you. Is it going to be Dalton Varsho? That is Alejandro Kirk. Are they going to be your superstars? Because Vlad Guerrero, as bad as he's been this year, is going to get paid. So is Bichette. And it's probably not going to be from the Toronto Blue Jays. So Blue Jays, I hope you still remember 92 and 93, because that's as close as you're getting to a World Series, I think, in the next 5 years or so. I hope you remember 2016 and Jose Bautista's bat flip, because that's as close as that place is going to get to being electric for a very long time if they don't make the postseason this year. Disappointment number two for me is the Marlins. I don't know how much of a disappointment it is to other people, because I don't know if they thought that this team was going to be better than they actually are. They're 10-29. They were 84-78 last year and were the second wild card team. Granted, they got swept by the Phillies, but the Phillies were a better team. We can all be honest about that. 16.5 games back of Philly in the NL East. That's good for last place. 9.5 games back of the third wild card. Somebody in Phoenix is trying to call me. Maybe they heard that we were talking about NL teams and they didn't want to be called one of the worst teams this year. They're only better than Colorado and Chicago. The White Sox, that is. That tells you how bad of a season they are, because both the White Sox and the Rockies are just in no man's land when it comes to their rebuild. I don't know what's going on in either of those situations. They traded away Luis Arraez. Peter Bendix has come out and said, yeah, we're probably not going to make the postseason this year. So he's already written off this season. You know, Vidal Brujan, Rafael Betancourt, Tim Anderson, not good free agent and trades this offseason. Starters have a 6.11 ERA. See, I'm just allergic to bad baseball.
Naturally.
They got a 5.21 total ERA. And the team as a whole has a slash line of 225, 281, 339, and a 620 OPS. They are just a bad, bad baseball team. And they got rid of Kim Yang in return for, you know, getting Bendix, because Kim Yang didn't want to work underneath somebody. And this is a team that made the postseason last year, had a good kind of nucleus around it, and now they're just breaking that all up like they did, you know, 20 years ago when they won the after they won the World Series. So it's just going to be rebuild after rebuild after rebuild in Miami, and they're just not getting any better with these rebuilds.
All right. Yeah. I mean, I agree with that. It's amazing how, you know, when the Marlins do have good years, they immediately blow it up. I mean, 2016 and 2017, the Marlins were a good team. They didn't make the playoffs, but they were a good team. They had Stanton, Yelich, Ozuna, and then Derek Jeter took over, got rid of everyone. Peter Bendix takes over here after the Marlins make the playoffs. They stink. They start trading everyone. Bendix, I'm more disappointed in him. I mean, they just waved the white flag in May last week when they said this team's probably not making the playoffs. Just waving the flag early. I get it, but you shouldn't say that as a general manager, because now how do the rest of the players in the clubhouse feel?
And this was after he said it's too soon to evaluate the team and the players when they were 6-20.
Yeah.
So 4 more wins and you're able to evaluate the team? I just don't get it. They're what? 10-29 this year. So I guess after 13 games ago, you couldn't say what this team was going to be. But after those 13 games, you could be like, yeah, we suck. We're not making the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty brutal. Speaking of another team that sucks, that I think has the same record at 10, or at least have 10 wins, the Chicago White Sox. Just continue to disappoint. I mean, there's no way around it. They are just absolutely horrific. Now, Tommy Pham is like Jesus Christ in the south side of Chicago, because he's playing well, but he knows that he's going to get traded in a couple months. Right. I mean, this team is just, it's amazing to me how the White Sox still find ways to like attract free agents and still spend like decent money, yet still suck. I mean, the pitching is just atrocious. Although Eric Fetty pitched really well last night, but that's the face of your rotation, really. Eric Fetty, Michael Kopech, who's never been all there. I mean, your best offensive players, dude, are Tommy Pham, Andrew Vaughn, who's hitting under 200, and Paul DeJong. That's bad. Andrew Benintendi, I don't know what that guy's doing out there. He drops a routine fly ball yesterday like it's absolutely nothing. The Sox did end up winning last night over the Guardians, but still, man, it's just amazing. Like, Chicago's still a great baseball market, and even though I think the White Sox are the most irrelevant team in that city, which they are, they still find a way to attract people to come, and yet they still suck. So that's all I really got for you in terms of the White Sox. Like, I didn't think it was going to get this bad, but it is.
I will say this now, though. They are injured more. They do have more stars injured than a lot of other guys do. Yoan Moncada went down. Luis Robert Jr. went down. So they are missing some key pieces in that lineup. Granted, when they were playing those first couple of weeks, they looked bad. But I will kind of stick a pin in, okay, are they this bad because they're this bad, or are they this bad because of some injuries that have piled up for them? But yeah, I mean, we didn't expect them to be this bad. Like, we expected maybe like a fourth, fifth place finish, but, you know, they still have some young guys coming up. Shout out to my boy Jordan Leisure, came in last night with bases loaded, nobody out. struck out the first two guys and then got the ground out to end the inning. So just surgical with it. 12 pitches, two strikeouts. Absolutely amazing. But yeah, I mean, they have been bad. Tommy Pham is probably going to get traded. They said possibly Eloy could get traded too. So that'd be interesting if he goes. They already traded Dylan Cease. So it'll be an interesting couple of months for Chicago. My disappointment number three, along the same lines as you with the Blue Jays, but mine are the stars of the Blue Jays, not just the Blue Jays in general. Chris Bassitt, who last year had 59 walks in 200 innings, already has 20 walks in 42 innings. He's got a 5.06 ERA. His opponents are batting .280 off him. Vlad Jr.'s got a 717 OPS. He's only got 10 extra base hits on the year. He's batting .246. Bo Bichette, 191. He's got 7 extra base hits. His OPS is .513, and the Blue Jays are 17-20. So don't have to rehash everything that we just said about them, but the stars of the Blue Jays are the reason why they're not performing and they're not good right now. Because like I said, who's going to be your star right now after both of those guys leave or for the rest of the year? Kevin Kiermaier and Dalton Varsho? Okay, good luck making the playoffs with that. So Schneider, very, very warm seat. Don't think it's hot. I wouldn't be surprised too if the Blue Jays kind of just cleaned house with everybody though, because this is going to be what they haven't won a playoff series since 2016. Am I correct?
Yeah, yeah.
When they beat the Rangers in 2016 in the ALDS, they haven't won another playoff series since. So this is a team that's made the playoffs as a wild card team, but has not advanced past the wild card round. So I would not be surprised if this offseason, more than just Schneider go. I would not be surprised.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I explained it earlier. Number four, this is going to be really controversial because they just did bring him up to the big leagues. Pittsburgh Pirates handling of Paul Skeens. With the influx of pitcher injuries, an injury is inevitable. It's going to happen. Again, this guy, right, is your number one overall pick. He's your franchise. I get it, right? He hasn't faced that many pro hitters. But this is a guy who you picked at number one knowing it's big league ready. LSU, I mean, you look at the competition and you look at the last 5 years, the college player getting drafted high, that percentage has gone way up over the last 5 years because these guys are pro ready out of colleges like LSU and Wake Forest. And I mentioned the injury thing. He's just mowing through people in AAA. Why are you wasting his bullets? If you think about it this way, with all these pitchers and these injuries, he's only going to have so many 102 heaters before he gets injured. So why are you wasting him in AAA? Especially with a Pirates team that's like on the fringe, they're trying to compete. I really love Jared Jones. I mean, Jared Jones was a kid that I actually saw in the minors when he played for the Greensboro Grasshoppers, high A. And I didn't think of it at the time. And I was like, whoa, okay, this kid's not half bad, right? And he's up in the big leagues throwing 99 miles an hour and mowing down hitters. It's been great. But no, I mean, Paul Skeens should have been up earlier. Like, you want to give him, you know, 3 starts in AAA, build him up fine. But if you're going to build him up in the big leagues, man, like, that's my thing. A guy who throws that hard with that great stuff, you know, I feel like he should have been built up in the big leagues a little bit or called up a little bit sooner. So I'm a little disappointed about that. But, I mean, he's a buzzworthy prospect. He's starting on Saturday, which will be tomorrow because we're recording on a Friday. So, yeah, excited to see Skeens. Just wish he was up earlier.
Yeah, well, you know what else is going to be interesting? How many innings do they give him in the majors? Is it one of those things that they give him a month in the majors to get 5 starts, see how he does, see how he handles everything, and then they send him back down to sporadically get his innings in AAA? Or how do they handle the rest of the development? Is he up in the majors to stay, or is it one of those things that we just want to see what he looks like, and then we're going to send him back down so he can finish out the rest of the season in AAA? Because what they did with Strasburg was they kept him down in the minors, brought him up in June, and then kept him up for the rest of the year until he got injured and had to have Tommy John surgery. But I believe that was after like 10 starts or so. So that was about a a month and a half, 2 months of major league time. So it'll be interesting to see what they do as far as, okay, is he giving us 5 to 6 innings of 3 runs or less baseball and we're winning? You know, say they go 4-1 in his starts, and with Jones, they go 4-1 in his starts. So now you're going 8-2 in these two guys' starts, and you're competitive, and you're in the second spot in the Central, first spot in the wild card. Are you keeping him up to ensure that you guys make the playoffs? Or are you like, okay, there's some things that he can still tweak. I know we're in the playoff position right now, but let's send him back down to develop some of these things and get his innings in AAA so we can work on these things. That way we're, you know, that way he's not having to do that against major league hitters. Or are they just going to say, screw it, if we're in the playoffs, great, but we're still just going to have him up for the whole year just so that he can face major league hitters.
Yeah, it's a tough call. I mean, I'm interested to see what they do. Like, you know, I know he was finally getting over the 5 innings mark in AAA, so I'd assume he'd have the same, you know, rules on him, I guess, in the big leagues. But, you know, he's starting against the Cubs tomorrow. We'll see how long he goes, and I just want to see the kid dominate. I think he's the most hyped-up prospect pitching-wise we've had since, you know, we talked about it earlier, since Strasburg. So,
because that's the other thing, too. If he's only going about 3 to 4 innings in the minors, right? Why would you do that in the majors? Why would you not just turn him into basically a glorified opener, right? If you're going to do that, or have him come up, and if you want him to get, you know, if he's only going to throw once a week and you want him to get 5 innings, right? Why not have him be a reliever that throws 2 innings on Monday, 2 innings on Thursday, 1 inning on Saturday, and that's his workload. And you get him ramped up to where then he can then be a starter. Because if you're only going to have him start and go 3 innings, what's the point of having him up in the big leagues, right? Other than just to face big league hitters, which I understand that's the whole big thing of development. But if you're still working him up, why not just work him up in AAA?
Well, again, you want to see these guys face the best of the best, man. Like, I get it. You know, minor league hitters are still better than college hitters. They're pro hitters. But Skeens has big league stuff, and it's already proven that he could dominate the minor leagues. So why are we wasting the bullets? That's my hope. You can't waste the bullets in AAA much longer.
What would you then consider not wasting bullets in the major leagues? If he's starting and getting to 6 innings, or because what if he is doing what I'm saying? You know, the thought process could be where if he's only throwing 5 innings a week, but he's going 2-2-1.
Well, I don't think
he's wasting bullets. Is that not wasting bullets because he's in the majors?
I don't think he's wasting bullets in the big leagues if you're limiting his innings because, like, he's there. He's in the show. You're developing him in the show. I mean, this is a guy who got drafted, what, 11 months ago? Right? 12 months or whatever it is?
307 days ago.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wasting his bullets by him being in the big leagues. You're developing his bullets, if anything, in the big leagues. And then it's like, okay, you know what? If he gets hurt, then you can say you put him up in the big leagues and he got hurt in the big leagues. Instead of, you know, half the pitching prospects we've seen over the last 15 years, oh, they got hurt in Double-A, you're out of baseball. You know, just the way I'm looking at it.
The only difference, though, is that Strasburg, because I remember watching Strasburg's first start, he went 7 innings.
Yeah.
Right now, granted, this was 10 years ago, you know, or 12 years ago, so it was a different time for starters. But if you're bringing him up to only throw 3 innings, you know, once a week, then it's kind of like, all right, I understand that you wanted to see, you know, big league hitters, but then why not just make him your closer for this year? Have him throw 102 for an inning, be the highest leverage inning that you can think of. And then still building him up to face big league hitters, you know, twice in the lineup, you know, 3 times in a game. So that's where I kind of go back and forth of, okay, if you're going to bring him up and he's going to throw, you know, he's going to make a start on Monday and Saturday, Monday and Sunday, and throw 10 innings those weeks, 12 innings those weeks, then I think it makes sense. But if you're still trying to build him up, I would much rather you not rush him to the big leagues just to be like, oh, okay, he got injured, but he's on the big league roster instead of AAA. Because let's put it this way. If Paul Skeens gets injured tomorrow in AAA, if he didn't get called up and making his MLB debut tomorrow, if he was still in AAA, made a start in AAA tomorrow and had to get Tommy John surgery, first of all, we'd all be like, oh, well, you know, oh, well, we knew it was coming. But two, he's not going to be out of baseball. He's just going to be out for, 12 months, and then, he'll go to spring training. He'll make a couple of rehab starts in AAA, and then he'll be right back in the big leagues. What would that be like? June or July, whenever he would get back. So to me, it's what is the rest of his development entail, and are you ready to let him just eat in the big leagues and throw five innings? Because what if he goes three innings and he gives up one run and he strikes out eight in the first three innings? It's like, okay, is his day done, or is he going to go another two innings and see what happens? So that's my whole thing. Like, how are you're kind of babying him in the minor leagues. How are you going to let him develop in the major leagues, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, I mean,
but anyways. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say my disappointment number four is Alex Bregman. Same reasons that you said for the Astros. I just singled out Bregman just because this is a walk year, like you said. This is the last year of a 5-year, $100 million deal. Astros are 12-24, and he's one of the big reasons. Six extra base hits. He's batting 192. He's got one home run. 11 RBIs. His OPS is 523. This is a guy that's a career 275 hitter. He finished second in the MVP once, behind Trout, when he hit 40 home runs in 2019. He's consistently hit 28 to 35 home runs every year. So it's just a bad year to have a bad year, considering it's a walk year. And the fact that the Astros, as banged up as they were, if they could have gotten some more production from some guys like Jose Abreu and Alex Bregman, they're possibly not 12-24. Maybe they're 18-22, and they're just meddling around 500. But right now, they're 12 games under. I didn't put how many games back they were in both the wild card and the West, but I know they're about 9 games back in the West of the Rangers, who are surging. So, but yeah, Alex Bregman, disappointment number four.
Disappointment number five, you can't really blame on any player per se, but it's just a team overall that, went to the World Series last year and is kind of struggling with injury, and they just did not build their roster very well this year, in my opinion. And that's the Arizona Diamondbacks. This is a team that does not have much depth pitching-wise, or that does not have experience depth. Pitching-wise, look at all the guys that they have called up to pitch for them this year. Tommy Henry, Kyle Nelson. They claim Joe Jacques off waivers from the Red Sox. No idea who that is. Justin Martinez, Andrew Salfrank, Slade Ciccone, Ryan Nelson on the DL. Jordan Montgomery, technically, right? And then Blake Walston made his major league debut last week. So, Jordan Montgomery, I can't say he's been great. Corbin Carroll got off to a horrible start, to where he was batting, I think the lowest they dropped him was seventh in the lineup. Not all that great from the Diamondbacks, who last year were getting, big outs from Fought, Gallen, who's, I believe, close to coming back from his injury. And it's supposed to be Gallen, Fought, Merrill Kelly, and Jordan Montgomery in that rotation, and right now only one of them is actively in the rotation in Jordan Montgomery. So, disappointing start for the D-backs.
Yeah. Staying in the NL West, my disappointment, my last one, is the Giants' big free agent signings. Matt Chapman signed for that 1-year, $20 million deal with a bunch of option years. After this year, he's batting 211. With four home runs, his OPS plus is 76. Those of you that don't know what OPS plus is, basically 100 is a league average hitter, and he's well below league average right now. He's got four home runs. He's already made six errors this year. He made 12 all of last year, so he has not gotten off to a good start, both offensively or defensively. And then Blake Snell. I know he's injured, and I know he didn't have a full spring training, but when he started, he was 0-3 with an 11.57 ERA. And then he makes three starts before he goes on the IL with an abductor injury. So he signed a one-year, $32 million deal with an option year on top of that. So just we thought the Giants were getting two really good players, and we thought that they were going to be a lot better this year in the West. They're kind of just meddling around 500 and in the middle of that NL West spot. We didn't think they were going to win the West just because of how good the Dodgers are, but we thought maybe a wild card spot, maybe a two or three wild card spot. But right now they'll be lucky to even finish above 500 because Yastrzemski is not really doing that well. They're not getting production, like I said, from Matt Chapman. Patrick Bailey's been good after they DFA'd Joey Bart, who went off for a little bit with Pittsburgh. I don't really know how he's doing now, but I know he got off to a good start once they claimed him. But just not a whole lot of offensive production from your lineup. And Logan Webb's carrying the pitching staff again. I mean, this is a really good pitcher, sinker slider pitcher that top three in the Cy Young last year, could very well be a dark horse candidate Cy Young Award winner this year just because of how good he's doing. But he's not going to get the recognition just because, one, it's a West Coast team, so not a whole lot of, you know, East Coast guys are going to watch him. But two, the Giants have not been that good since 2021, since Buster Posey left and they won those 108 games. So, I think he needs to get a little bit more recognition that he does for how good he is, because he finished third with a 10-13 record last year. So, but disappointment number five are those big, big free agent stars. Or signings, I should say. Stars, signings, same thing.
Yeah, I like it. All right, I mean, we touched on Paul Skeens. He's coming up tomorrow. Rays are playing the Yankees this weekend at the Trop. So I don't know. That's always a fun series, and. Yeah, that's a good little segment we had there.
Yeah, Charlie Condon just broke Jack Caglione's record for most home runs in a BB Corps era. He also broke the Georgia all-time record. He's got 59 home runs now as a Georgia Bulldog. A guy that was a preferred walk-on. I didn't know that, though. I didn't realize he was a preferred walk-on with Georgia, so that's something that's pretty interesting. I want to get your take on this real quick, because the Guardians came out and basically said, you know, they have no interest in trading, or not trading, but drafting Condon with the first pick. They're going to still keep it with Bazana and Caglione. I just want to get your take on that real quick and see what you thought about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. I mean, I don't think you can go wrong with picking Jack Caglione over Charlie Condon. I think you obviously know what you're getting out of Jack Caglione. I mean, he's a two-way guy, and I do think he will be for the foreseeable future in his pro career. So I really have no problem with it. I mean, it's clear as day that Charlie Condon is just showing out this year and having, you know, the best year of any bat that's draft eligible. So, yeah, I don't really have any issue with it. I think, like, if you pick Caglione at number one, that's a guy who, you know, you look at the stature, you look at his numbers and just what he does. That is a typical number one overall pick. Like I said, everyone was saying Nick Kurtz this, Nick Kurtz that. You can find power guys later in the draft. Not saying Charlie Condon isn't just a power guy because he does hit for average too, but you can find these guys later in the draft. The uniqueness of Jack Caglione is what's going to get him picked, you know, number one or number two. So I don't really have a problem with it.
Yeah, and I read somewhere something though that Caglione, they're not projecting him to be a pitcher in the next at the next level. So I'll be interested to see whatever team does draft him, if they decide to just stick him, you know, in a I don't know, I don't think he can play outfield. I think he's going to be a first baseman because that's all he's been playing in Florida. But I'll be interested to see if they try that route. You know, how like the Rays did with Brendan McKay, they still tried to make him a first baseman and pitcher. And right now McKay's just kind of given up the whole hitting part of it. He's still trying to make his way back. I know he's in Double-A with the Rays. But I'll be interested to see whether or not at that next level, a scout just goes, you know what, we're just going to make you a hitter. Which, I mean, you can't go wrong with just having Jack Caglione hit. Because, I mean, did you see Did you see the home run that he hit the other day off of USF?
Did.
It kind of looked like an excuse me swing, and he just put it over the left field wall.
Yeah, I was that. I mean, he's a fun watch, man. I mean, he's still having a great year with the bat. I mean, it's not like last year, but again, I mean, he's still going to get picked. You know, I do think he's going to be the number one overall pick. His numbers are fantastic.
Yeah, it'll be surprising if he's not in the top three at least. So, but that's I think that's going to wrap it up for our episode. That actually took those ten teams slash players kind of just took up an hour and a half, or not an hour and a half, but an hour and 5 minutes of this podcast. So I think that's where we're going to end it there. Again, just some disappointments and some surprises this year. We'll see if those, maybe we'll do like a mid-season look back. So keep your card the same way we did with the free agents. Maybe we'll do a little mid-season look back, see if those surprises are still surprising and those disappointments are still very disappointing. But Harris, unless you have anything else to add, I think we can end this episode right here.
Yeah, we're all good. We're going to get loaded up on college baseball pretty soon as we're hitting, you know, we're starting to get the end of May. We're going to try and get a couple guests on here, trying to line up someone big who, in my opinion, is the best hitter in the country. So, yeah, we're getting to a good part of the baseball year coming up right here.
Yeah, 2 weekends left of conference play until conference tournaments. I know some conference tournaments starting next week, but all the big Power 5 conference tournaments start in about two and a half weeks. So we'll be getting you those then. We'll be getting you those matchups and whatnot when they come out and give you our takes on that. But that's going to do it for episode 39 of Young Lads. I am Peter DeFee, joined as always with Harris Eisenberg. Harris, thank you so much. We will talk to you next week.